My house, my rules, is easily the most common refrain when children, regardless of age, live in their parents' home. But that can be a damaging mindset fraught with problems that extend beyond sharing a home and into the familial relationship. While, yes, it's a logical viewpoint, it also ignores the fact that we all have the right to enjoy where we live with a modicum of autonomy. There are any number of reasons adult children may live with their parents: cultural norms, financial limitations, etc. When children have moved away and then move back, it can be difficult to reframe the parent-child relationship in a way that respects both the parent's authority over the home and the child's autonomy as an adult. As in every other shared living situation, the best way to come to an arrangement that works for everyone involved is to talk about it. Have a frank and honest conversation about expectations and responsibilities. With frequent and productive communication, this living arrangement doesn't have to be full of emotional minefields. One of the more difficult things to deal with when living with an adult in your parents' home can be accepting that you only have control over a very small part of where you live. The house as a whole is not yours, so it may be tough to exert any kind of power over the living conditions in general. What you can do, though, is make your room into a haven that you truly enjoy. With good storage, a strong organizational system, and by staying on top of keeping it clean and tidy, you can turn your one room into a mini home that you enjoy spending time in, without having to stress out about all of the other rooms that are still firmly under your parents' jurisdiction. Living in small spaces doesn't have to mean a cluttered, chaotic environment. With a small amount of effort and a solid plan for getting and staying organized, a small space can be just as comfortable, clean, and inviting as a whole house. And while having to pick up and clean more often can be kind of annoying, it also completely eradicates the need for stressed-out marathon cleaning. So whether you're in a dorm room, a tiny studio apartment, or just one room in someone else's house, you can still very easily make that space your own and keep it from devolving into a disaster zone. You just have to get started. 3. Troubleshooting. Dealing with other people in your fucked-up space. Roommates, spouses, and significant others. Asking for help or helping someone else. Roommates, spouses, and significant others. Congratulations! You've decided to turn your messy home into a place that you love to spend time in. You have the tools you need to get started with a sustainable cleaning plan. You're motivated. You're energized. You're excited. For the first time, you feel like there might be hope for you and your home after all. There's just one little problem. You live with other people. Whether those people are connected to you by blood, by choice, or by the fact that rent is really freaking expensive, adding other human beings into the equation will always complicate things. And these complications are rarely for the better. Let's just get the cold, hard truth out of the way right off the bat. Living with other people is pretty much the worst. Regardless of your relationship, you and the people you live with probably fight the most about two things: money and housekeeping. That's true for spouses, roommates, parents and children, whatever. But the housekeeping part of it doesn't have to be that bad. If you can understand why you fight about housekeeping and make an effort to either prevent or resolve these conflicts, you just might be able to survive a shared living space. Who knows? You might even be able to enjoy it. Maybe. The difficult, shitty reality of living with other people is that it sucks because you're sharing space with people whose standards and habits often do not align with your own. When two or more people are sharing a living area, one person almost always has a much stricter standard for clean, and they're almost always angry about it. Angry because the person or people they live with aren't maintaining the same standard. Angry because someone invariably feels like they're doing all of the work. Angry because they don't see the point in putting all of this work in around the house if no one's going to help them, damn it! There's always a perceived inequity in effort toward housework. One person feels like another isn't doing their part, or one person feels like another has unreasonable and unrealistic expectations of them, and both of these situations breed resentment and rage. But they don't have to. Whether you live with roommates, a spouse, children, your parents, or in any other configuration of shared housing, your relationships with the people you live with can affect how you progress with getting your mess under control. Your main goals in living with other people should be sticking to your own habits and routines, using open and frequent communication to ask for help or buy-in or just understanding, and accept the limits that exist when you involve other people. If you can keep your frustration, anger, and resentment to a minimum, you'll be much more successful and much happier in your home overall. And the best way to avoid all of those negative emotions is to just get everything out in the open before it has a chance to fester and get worse. While navigating the obstacle course that is living with other people, it's good to remember a few key points. You can't change anyone's habits but your own. You can beg for help, plead for buy-in, make threats, stomp around, throw things, or just generally despair of your situation. But the sad fact is that you can't make someone care about the mess the same way that you care about the mess. If you live with loved ones, hopefully you can make them care about how the mess affects you, since they presumably already care about your feelings, but as far as changing habits goes, you're better off focusing your energies inward. It's important to realize that this is a personal journey, and getting upset or resentful about what other people are or aren't doing can be a major setback in your own progress. You'll start focusing more on what everyone else is or isn't doing than on making changes within yourself, and that's a surefire path to disappointment. It can be difficult to let go of this mindset, but your time is better spent working on your own habits. Eventually, the people you live with just might come around. Until then, though, do this for you. Do it because you want somewhere nice to live, and because you deserve the satisfaction of being the one to make it that way. You're the one who's invested in this right now. You're ready to go. You've done your listening. You've armed yourself with the necessary supplies and plans, and you're so excited to get going. Unfortunately, this doesn't mean that the people you live with are at the same point. If they are, that's great, and makes everything easier for everyone. But chances are, you're revved up and they aren't. They might be skeptical or annoyed or pessimistic. Maybe they just don't even give a shit at all. That's fine. That's on them. What you need to focus on is you and your behavior and habits. If you're successful, chances are good that they'll come around. In the meantime, don't let the fact that you seem to be in this alone deter you. Just because the people you live with don't share your enthusiasm doesn't mean you can't succeed. You just might have to be your own cheerleader for a while. And just because the other people in your home aren't on your level as far as the process goes, doesn't make them the enemy. It's easy to frame a situation like this as me versus them, but that's not really a helpful mindset. Understand that they're not being psyched up as you are about cleaning the house doesn't mean they want you to fail. It just means that you have different levels of investment, with yours being pretty high and theirs ranging anywhere from meh to non-existent. Don't take it personally. It's not a reflection on how they feel about you. It's a reflection on how they feel about housework. It's not sabotage. Either they don't notice or they don't care. This one can sting a little, I know. But there are very few instances in which someone you live with is actively trying to sabotage your efforts. If that's truly the case, then it's probably time to start re-examining your living situation, because that's some toxic bullshit right there. In the vast majority of circumstances, however, it's far more likely that the people who share your home either don't realize what it is you're doing, or they don't notice it because it's not a particularly high priority for them. Again, this isn't personal. It's not about you. It's about them. And the best you can do is acknowledge that they're not intentionally making things worse for you, even if things getting worse is the ultimate result. Don't assume sabotage when obliviousness is the more likely answer. Human beings are inclined to attribute things to malice that are best explained by apathy, and when we falsely identify other people's motivations, we create a situation in our minds that not only doesn't exist, but colors all of our future interactions. Avoid this. Talk about it. If they don't notice, tell them. If they don't care, make it plain that you do. Seriously, talk about it. the vast majority of problems with roommates, and with relationships of all kinds, to be honest, can usually be solved with conversation. Sitting down and talking, rather than letting things build up and risking miscommunication, will go a long way toward avoiding or resolving conflict of all kinds. It's no different when you're dealing with housework. The best time to have a conversation about housework expectations and potential problems is before you enter into a living situation with other people. The second best time is right now. You're never going to make any progress whatsoever with the people you share space with if you don't sit down and talk to them. And I mean a real verbal conversation. None of this leaving notes nonsense. You know that's passive-aggressive. Any potential progress will be dashed from the outset if you leave a note instead of having a talk. If you're lucky enough to be able to have the discussion before entering into a shared living situation, use the time to discuss everyone's expectations. Come up with a schedule or a list or a chart, whichever works best for you. Most important, come up with a plan for what to do when things inevitably go off the rails. That way, when it's 3 days after the trash was supposed to have been taken out and it's still sitting there, stinking up the kitchen, you have a mutually agreed-upon course of action to address it. If you're already living with people and things need to change, sit down and talk it out as soon as possible. This discussion can be far more difficult, because it carries the weight of past experience with it, so it's critically important to try to keep accusations and resentment out of it. Think of it as a reset. You're looking to change things, starting now. You can't change what's happened in the past, no matter how much you might want to. Follow the steps you'd take for an initial discussion. Figure out who's going to do what and when. Decide, together, what to do when things get off track. Be honest about expectations and workload. And again, if you live with family, either chosen or by blood, rather than roommates, use the fact that you care about and value each other to help move your discussion along. If someone cares about you but doesn't care about the mess, try explaining how the mess affects you and how they can help, not necessarily because they want the mess gone, but because they care about your happiness and sanity. This conversation is rarely easy, and maybe it won't go the way that you're hoping. The important thing is to have it. Lay out your plans and your hopes, and figure out how much buy-in you're going to get from the people you live with. Knowing this ahead of time can help you temper your expectations and come up with a clear game plan for dealing with all of the things that might arise as you try to get your mess under control. If your conversation ends in you figuring out you're on your own in this, well, at least you have an informed baseline to work with, and you can make decisions about what you do and don't do from there. Don't be a doormat. If the people you live with aren't being cooperative, no one's saying you need to be the maid. No one's saying you need to constantly be cleaning up after the people you live with. You can work around other people and their stuff without having to become responsible for it. When you have a solid, clear plan, it's very easy to know how you need to interact with other people's stuff. If your conversation is thorough enough, you'll know exactly how to respond when your roommate leaves dishes in the sink for 2 weeks, or what to do with a couch piled with laundry that isn't yours. Clear communication will help you avoid feeling like you're doing all the work, or you're stuck being responsible for everyone else's stuff. Part of being the one to get the mess under control when other people are involved is that you have to be the one to initiate the crappy conversations. Rather than taking all of your roommate's dirty dishes and dumping them on their bed, I understand the inclination, really I do, but I mean, come on. You need to say, "I need to wash my dishes, but yours are taking up all of the space in the sink. When can I expect the sink to be available for me?" If at that point, your roommate tells you they don't care if you put the dishes on their bed, well, then go ahead and do that. Don't take responsibility for the dishes, but make it perfectly clear that they need to be dealt with. Does it suck to have to hold adults accountable for their own belongings? Absolutely. Is it frustrating to be the one who always has to take charge and initiate these conversations? No doubt. But part of living and interacting with other people is taking responsibility for your own priorities by making your needs clear. Make no mistake, there are shitty roommates out there. Lots of them. There are people who simply won't do their part no matter how many reasonable conversations you have. But unfortunately, whether it's for the rest of the lease or until you can afford to move out, you have to live there. Don't sacrifice your sanity. Take whatever steps you need in order to ensure a comfortable living space for yourself in the meantime. And who knows? To someone else, maybe you're the shitty roommate. It's all about perception. And it's good to realize that people are complex in their interactions with each other, and often end up showing parts of their personalities they aren't proud of, like spite and anger and pettiness, as a reaction to what their living environment is like. Feeling like a doormat when you're living with kids. Those of you who have children may find yourself feeling like a doormat more often than not. I'm not the parent, you think. I'm the maid. Well, now is the time to start changing that dynamic. Keep in mind that unless you won some kind of parenting jackpot, your kids are probably going to A. absolutely hate cleaning, B. complain and whine about it and throw tantrums and tell you they hate you for making them put their stuff away, and C. be pretty terrible at cleaning, because they're kids and they're still learning both how to clean and how to not be intentionally awful at stuff they really don't want to do. Consistency, patience, positivity, and clear expectations are all important when you're trying to bring kids of all ages in line with your "holy crap, I need you people to help me out here" plan. Resist the urge to throw up your hands and just do it yourself when things aren't going as you'd like, because then you're just training your kids in the dark art of learned helplessness. If you start young enough, this process will be easier. Not 100% easy, because what about parenting is easy? But if you're not at the point where you need to untrain bad habits or remove the expectation that house adult does all the cleaning while the kids play Mario Kart, said kids will learn that they might not like your expectations, but they do still have to do what you ask. And video games are not going to happen until all the toys are back in their homes. Being positive about housework can go a long way toward teaching your kids how to clean. If you're perpetually annoyed and frustrated by housework and that's what the kids are seeing, they're going to learn real quick that housework is a thing to be feared and hated, not unlike a punishment. By not treating cleaning and housework like, well, a chore, you'll make it a little easier to get them into the habit of meeting your expectations and keeping a clean house to boot. Praise and rewards, even small ones, go a long way toward reinforcing good behavior. Even if the job is imperfectly done, it's so important to reward effort rather than criticizing results. With time and practice, they'll eventually get better at housework, and being supported and congratulated, even after less than desired results, will help encourage them to keep trying. And by modeling positivity when doing housework yourself, instead of letting your aggravation and annoyance show, you'll teach your kids that it's just a normal part of life. If you have or live with children and you're trying to teach them to pick up after themselves, keep in mind that how you interact with them regarding housework will likely shape the way they approach cleaning for the rest of their lives. In the beginning, the routine and the effort are far more important than the end result. The more critical you are, the more likely they are to develop negative associations with cleaning that could affect them even years later. Encourage effort above all. Sure, you can direct them toward the most effective way of doing something, but if you recognize and celebrate their efforts rather than criticizing their results, then housekeeping will become just another thing to do, rather than a dreaded chore, a punishment, or an activity to rebel against. Passive-aggressive behavior never works. Put the post-it notes down and step away. Stop muttering under your breath. Take it easy on slamming the cabinet doors. These are all really common reactions to frustration at other people not pulling their weight, but unfortunately, without exception, they're all completely ineffective. Passive-aggressive acts come across as petty. They undermine your position as far as asking for help. They cause the object of your behavior to be defensive, and they make you seem childish and irrational. But, for some reason, we keep thinking that leaving nasty notes and mumbling through our frustrations is the most effective way to get through to people who aren't doing what we want them to. Nope. It's avoidance dressed up in fancy attire. Slamming things and stomping around because you aren't pleased with how things are going comes across as childish for a reason. Because you're basically throwing a low-grade temper tantrum. It may feel good in the short term to get the frustration out, but it will almost never result in any actual change in your situation. Listen, passive-aggressive behavior will almost always backfire on you. Either the person you're mad at won't even realize what you're doing, or they'll swing all the way back around to actively not helping because they're so annoyed. Use your energy more wisely and have an actual adult conversation. Start a dialogue. Explain what's upsetting you. Ask for specific things that will help you, and really listen to what the other person has to say. You may find out that your expectations are out of line with reality, or that, shockingly, other people have no idea what's going on in your head unless you sit down and tell them. Many people go straight to passive-aggressive behavior without trying any other, more effective methods first, simply because they don't realize that not everyone has the same standards and expectations that they do. Passive-aggressive behavior comes in other flavors, too. A lot of people tend to just stop cleaning when they get fed up with the people who live with them, figuring, "I'll show them how bad it can get when I don't do everything." This is counterproductive on a whole bunch of levels. First of all, as we've already addressed, it's possible that they won't notice or won't care. And if they do notice, your actions are just going to come across as spiteful and petty. Not to mention, when you do this, you also have to live in the mess while you're busy making your point. You're punishing yourself just as much as you imagine you're punishing the people you live with. More even, because the mess bothers you in a way it obviously doesn't bother them. Lots of people do the spite strike. Don't do the spite strike. Have a conversation instead. Let go of the right way. The right way here means the way I would do it, and therefore the only possible way anyone should do it. If you're looking for help around the house, you might have to unclench a little bit and realize that there's more than one way of loading a dishwasher, or cleaning a toilet, or doing laundry. When someone makes an effort to help only to be told that they're doing it wrong, do you think that inspires them to want to pitch in more? No, it absolutely does not. It tells them that no matter what they do, it won't be good enough, so why bother? Imposing your own standards on someone else is hardly an effective way to make them want to do their part. If you're holding someone to your exact standards of clean, you may need to step back a little bit and ask, "Is it clean enough? Even if it's not the way I think it should be done?" People who complain about lack of help are often sabotaging themselves by doing everything possible to make sure that the people they want to help are so discouraged and dejected that they never try again. Either relax a little about things being done the right way, or give up the right to complain that you aren't getting any help. If you're the person who's on the receiving end of criticism, first figure out if you're intentionally half-assing the task because you don't feel like doing it, or if you're actually doing the best you can. If you're not putting in a legitimate effort, ask yourself why, and whether it would be just as easy, and cause less grief, to do it right. If you are doing your best but still falling short of someone else's expectations, talk to that person. You might ask them to cut you a little slack since you're legitimately putting in the effort. Tell them that their criticism makes it difficult to want to help out more, since you feel like what you're doing isn't good enough. See if you can come to some sort of accord and help them see that you are, in fact, trying. If you're the other one. So, the person you live with is trying to clean up your home, and now they're trying to get you to help too. What the hell? How dare they, right? Come on, let's be fair here. No one is under the impression that anyone actually wants to clean. But sometimes it needs to happen. And if you're contributing to making the mess, it's not unreasonable to expect you to help clean it up. And yes, maybe you feel like for whatever reason it shouldn't be your job. Maybe you really, truly don't care if the place is messy. You don't mind dirty laundry. A dearth of clean dishes doesn't bug you at all. And you don't care if other people see the place as the grungy landscape it is. Or you have no interest in inviting people over, ever. Having a clean house is honestly the least important thing to you, so why should you have to participate in cleaning up? Well, guess what? You participated in making the mess, and it's obviously at least kind of important to the person or people you live with. And depending on your relationship with said person or people, that can give you some reasonably compelling reasons to help out. If it's your roommate trying to get you to clean up, keep in mind that you're both paying to live there, and your roommate isn't paying for the privilege of dealing with your mess. As part of the basic social contract of living with someone, you owe it to them to, at the very least, keep your own mess confined to your personal space. That means doing your own dishes, making sure your mess doesn't infringe on shared spaces, and not using their stuff and then leaving it for them to deal with. Let me repeat that. Do not use your roommate's stuff and then leave it for them to deal with. This means not using their dishes and leaving them dirty, not eating their food and leaving them to replace it, and not wearing their clothes and leaving them unwashed. Weird, but it happens. Even if you have express permission to use their dishes, eat their food, or wear their clothes, basic courtesy dictates that you return things to people in the condition you received them, or replace things that you used up. When you live with someone, even if you don't particularly like them, there's a ground floor expectation for your behavior, the bare minimum of consideration you'd show anyone else in their home, even when that home is your home too. If you're being asked to do things that you legitimately feel are unreasonable, rather than going on some kind of strike, explain that you'll be happy to wash dishes, but once a day is far more realistic than 3 times a day. Or that cleaning the bathroom is doable, but on the weekend works much better for you than in the middle of a work week. Relationships require communication and compromise from all participants. It's a dick move to share a living space with someone and think that you have zero responsibility toward keeping that space clean. But if you have real reasons why you need to adapt or adjust what you're being asked to do, sit down and have a conversation about it. Your living environment will be far more bearable, maybe even pleasant, if you and your roommate can hash things out in a way that doesn't leave either of you feeling like the other is being unreasonable. If the person you live with is your spouse or significant other, you have to consider that you have a relationship that's far more important than being roommates. Knowing that, however, doesn't change the fact that people in romantic relationships who cohabitate always fight about housekeeping. Always. Cleaning and money are by far the most common topics of arguments between romantic partners, and what often ends up destroying these relationships isn't relationship issues, but roommate ones. The added nuances of a romantic relationship usually end up making roommate stuff more complicated rather than less, because there are so many levels of interpersonal conflicts and emotions that inform every little household issue. So when you're fighting about the dishes, you're not just fighting about the dishes. You're fighting about what the dishes represent. While you may not care about the mess, if your partner is asking or begging for help, your partner cares about the mess, and you need to decide whether or not you care about your partner and their feelings more than you don't care about the mess. If not contributing to household work is more important to you, because you hate it that much, or because you're trying to prove some sort of point, than your partner's happiness, it might be time to take a hard look at that relationship. Because when someone else's happiness is important to you, sometimes their priorities need to become priorities for you, too. Whether you're bound to the people you live with by blood, choice, or just a pressing need to be able to pay the rent, it's in everyone's best interest to try to find a fair and equitable solution to the housework problem. Harmony in cohabitation can be achieved with a little bit of compromise from everyone involved, even if it means sometimes doing stuff you really don't want to do. When you're not constantly annoyed by housework battles, you might find you actually like the person you're sharing space with. Asking for help or helping someone else. The last thing you want to do when you feel like your house is a total shithole is invite someone into it. If it's bad enough that your place looks like a tornado hit it, why on earth would you want to compound the problem by having someone witness it in all of its horrifying glory? Why would you want to give people the opportunity to judge you and mock you, right? Well, kind of, but not really. Those thoughts are valid, But there's another side to it. One of the weird and cool things about human nature is that we generally despise dealing with our own messes, but lots of us absolutely love getting our hands on someone else's. A mess we create ourselves is usually mortifying and shameful, but someone else's mess is like a brand new episode of a home makeover show, and we want to be the star, not the subject. There's a reason that before and after pictures are so deeply satisfying. It speaks to that part of us that sees a problem and immediately starts thinking about how to fix it. Even better that it's not actually our problem to solve. And then there are the emotional associations. When you look at your mess, your feelings are mostly negative. Disappointment, failure, helplessness, shame. When you come into someone else's space for the express purpose of helping to clean it up, you're a superhero. You're helpful and considerate and acting with that person's best interests in mind. See the difference? Granted, these emotions don't always make a ton of sense, as emotions are so rarely logical, but they're really pretty common. Helping is awesome. Being helped, less awesome, at least in our minds. And that association tends to prevent us from utilizing all of the tools at our disposal. So while we're often embarrassed by the state of our homes, we might be missing out on a valuable resource for helping us get things straightened out. Our friends and family. In healthy relationships, these people want us to be happy, and they understand that our homes might get a little out of hand. Of course, unhealthy relationships can be full of judgment and short on understanding on both sides, so throwing two people who feel that way into a messy space in order to clean it up can be a recipe for disaster. If you feel like someone is going to be shitty about it or use it against you, don't ask them. Even if they're the tidiest, most organized person you know. Maybe especially then. Organization without empathy can be a dangerous combination. Just ask that really horrible boss you had that one time. But if you have someone who's looking out for you, they might be your best bet for helping wrangle your mess if you can come around to feeling comfortable asking for their help. Don't misunderstand. There's a lot of trust involved in allowing someone into your space to help you get things under control. You have to trust them to be kind, supportive, and honest. But if you have someone like that in your life, it's a huge asset, and a resource you should be taking advantage of. Someone in your life who's expressed concern or offered help in the past might be just the person to help you out. As long as the concern comes in the form of support, not criticism. You might have people in your life who would love to help you out but don't know how to broach the subject, or don't want to hurt your feelings. Someone who's that considerate of your feelings is probably a great person to ask. So how do you go about asking? Lots of people know that their friends and family need help with their homes, but they hesitate to overstep their boundaries by offering help. If there's someone in your life you think fits the bill, just start with a casual question. I need to clean up around the house, and I could use an extra set of hands. Is that something you could help me with if I bribe you with pizza? Most people are going to be pretty honest here. An enthusiastic affirmative is a green light. You might be surprised at how happy people are to be asked. So often, they're worried about you and want to help but don't know how. A gentle rejection probably just means they hate cleaning entirely, whether it's their stuff or yours. If you do get a no, try not to take it too personally. There are so many reasons someone might decline, and almost none of them have anything to do with you and everything to do with cleaning in general. Once you've rallied some help with wrangling your mess, here are some tips for making the most of it. Pre-planning. Before your help arrives, sit down and figure out what you need to do and what you need the person who's helping you to do. Do you need your helper to make decisions about what stays and what goes? Or is that the exact thing you don't want anyone else to do? Do you need a lot of help physically moving stuff around? Someone to tell you where to start and suggest what to do next? There are a million ways this can go, and it'll be most beneficial if you can figure it out beforehand. Once you decide, write down your thoughts. Then sit down with the other person and talk about what you're looking for. Use your notes as a guide for the conversation and take notes about what arises from the discussion. They'll be pretty helpful to look back on if things get a little rocky, or if you need to do a course correction partway through the process. As always, honest and open communication is absolutely key here. Both sides need to be clear about what each needs from the other, and willing to stop and address concerns as they come up. The more you talk about it and establish guidelines and parameters, the smoother it'll go. You might have to get past some initial discomfort, but once you get through that, you'll be able to accomplish so much more. Having a clearly defined plan, as well as talking about some of the tough things that are likely to come up while you're working, will be incredibly useful. This can be awkward to talk about, but if you've gotten to the point where you're willing to have someone in your home to help you clean it up, and that someone has agreed to it, you're both already on board. There's a lot in this process that has the potential to be emotional or difficult. There's so much fear involved. Fear of asking for help, fear of dealing with your mess, fear of judgment, fear of what might be lurking inside that invisible corner. There's no avoiding it. So the best thing you can do is to get it out in the open. If you know that sorting through your closet is going to be hard for you, say so. If you're dreading having to deal with shredding years worth of old bills, bring that up. Your helper might have ideas of ways to work through it, and if not, at the very least, they'll know you might need some extra care. Make no mistake, the planning is just as important as the actual cleaning and organizing. Going in haphazardly is a pretty surefire way for things to get complicated and messed up when you're in the middle of it. Don't skimp on the planning. It might also have the bonus effect of making you feel calmer and more confident overall about the whole thing. Some important questions for pre-planning. What do you want to accomplish with this big clean? What do you need the most help with? What do you want to leave for another time? What are you going to do with the things you get rid of? What do you not want your helper to do, say? During the process. It might be hard to start. It might even be hard to open the door and let your helper in. The fear of judgment and all of the negative emotions you're carrying about the state of your home are likely to make it very difficult to get going. Just remember that this person is here for you. You've been open and honest with them, and they've been honest right back, and they want to help. Things aren't going to go exactly as planned. It might even get difficult and crappy and frustrating. Everyone involved is going to get mad or upset or overwhelmed. That's all totally okay. You know that it's going to happen going into it, so just be prepared. If you came up with a game plan early on, like I told you to, that's great. You can follow the steps you laid out and move past whatever the problem is. Let's be real, though. You probably didn't do that. You got excited about the project and couldn't wait to get started and maybe didn't plan as well as you could have. It's fine. That's human nature. When you hit a speed bump in the process, take a step back and look at a few things. First, what's the real problem? Is it that you can't decide what to do with that hideous sweater your favorite aunt gave you? Or are you afraid if you get rid of the sweater, it'll somehow be a commentary on your relationship with Auntie Barbara? Once you can figure out what's really bothering you, it might be a little bit easier for you to work through. Next, ask yourself what you want the result of the current problem to be. And, more importantly, what you're afraid it will be. As I mentioned earlier, fear is behind so much of this process. Whether it's fear of a drastic change in your surroundings, or losing the comfort of having all of your possessions out and available for mental inventory, there's definitely some freak-out feelings in there somewhere. Acknowledge it. Name it if you need to, and figure out why it's tripping you up. If your helper is someone who can be emotionally supportive on this level, take advantage of that. Use their support to help you work through it. As you're working, take breaks. Make sure you're fed and hydrated and not overexerting yourself. Check in and see how you're doing emotionally. Let yourself have a good cry if you need one, or a ridiculous dance party to shake off some nervous energy. Have a corny funeral for your discarded possessions. Just maybe not a Viking funeral. We don't need to get fire involved with all this hard work and emotion. Take pictures. Not just befores and afters, although those are pretty important, but also pictures of things you might be reluctant to get rid of. Or just progress pictures so you can look back and see what you accomplished at various stages in the process. Photo documenting the process is a great way to give yourself a little bit of distance from all of the difficult stuff you're working through, and it turns the whole process into more of an anthropological study and less of a self-criticism. afterward. Follow-up is key for everyone involved. If it's your home that got cleaned up, you need to make an effort to make sure it doesn't get back to that before stage. Use the resources you've acquired and do what you can to keep on top of your home and your mess. Make sure you're doing something, anything, every day that's a positive interaction with your living environment. Clear off your coffee table and put some flowers in a vase. Hang up your clothes and put on your favorite sweater. Wash your dishes and make a mug of gourmet hot cocoa. That'll help keep you from backsliding and also ensure you're feeling pretty good about where you live and how much work you've done to make it awesome. There might be some emotional stuff to deal with after a major overhaul. You'll probably feel a lot of relief and pride once you're all done, but you might also feel some other things you aren't totally prepared for. Perhaps loss for the stuff you got rid of, or a little shame that it took so long to start undoing the mess. It's natural to have these feelings, but don't let yourself wallow in them. Sure, you might feel guilty that you let it get that bad, but you should also feel a pretty significant amount of satisfaction and accomplishment that you did all of the difficult things involved in fixing it. If you're the person who helped, don't just finish the project and forget about it. Your friend is going to need some support for a while. Maybe some reassurance that they did the right thing. Maybe some ongoing help to keep from getting overwhelmed. Or maybe just someone to talk to. A major overhaul of one's living space can be a lot to take in all at once, and the aftermath can be a little tricky. Be there for your friend as much as you can, and lend support however it's needed. With cooperation and communication at every stage in the process, you can make a huge difference in the condition of your, or someone else's, living space. Just remember to stay open and honest, check in frequently, and stay positive, focused, and non-judgmental. What to do if you're the helper? If you have a friend whose home is a mess and you want to help, you need to tread carefully. This goes double if it's a family member. It's very easy to hurt someone's feelings or make them feel self-conscious or embarrassed about this. Once they ask for your help, be positive, be supportive, and keep their feelings in mind. For example, not helpful. Oh, thank God you're finally doing something about that trash heap. Helpful. I'm so glad you felt comfortable asking me. I'd love to help. What can I do? See the difference? The very act of asking for help is fraught with emotion and fear. Don't make it worse. Keep in mind that every word and action from you, especially in the beginning, will set the tone for how this goes. Choose your words and actions carefully and with the knowledge that the person who asked you for help is likely feeling pretty vulnerable and exposed right now. If you're positive and supportive, that fear and vulnerability will start to go away. If you're negative, critical, or judgmental, your friend is soon going to regret asking, and the whole process will be more difficult for everyone, mostly the asker. If you don't think you can be sensitive, sympathetic, and constructive, it might be better to gently decline the request for help rather than risk irreparably damaging your relationship. If you do say no, do it kindly and without judgment. If you can give a solid, easy-to-understand reason that has nothing to do with the person, do so. It'll go a long way toward avoiding feelings of rejection. If you are willing to be part of the process, being the helper can be tricky. You need to find a good balance between being useful and respecting the rules and limitations of the person you're helping. You might want to completely empty the place out, tossing trash and unneeded possessions indiscriminately. That might be what the space needs, but it probably isn't what your friend needs. They might only be ready to tackle the obvious trash and the dishes. They might not be prepared to sort through and decide the fate of all of their possessions, so don't push it. Just do what they ask you to. Unless you've been given the authority, don't start chucking stuff out left and right. You want your friend to be open to more help in the future, and the best way to do that is to not push for more than they're ready to do. You can certainly offer suggestions, but take no for an answer the first time, and get back on track as quickly and easily as you can. In case you were wondering, yes, it's 100% possible to do more harm than good. For example, by taking liberties with your friend's space or getting rid of things you weren't supposed to. Just because it seems obvious to you that something needs to get chucked doesn't mean it's okay for you to make that decision. Think of yourself as a set of hands controlled by someone else's brain. You're not here to make the decisions. You're here to help the person who made the decisions do the work. If all has gone well in the early stages of this big clean, you'll have had an open and frank discussion of what's going to happen, how it's all going to go down, and what you can and can't do to help. Here are a few more things to keep in mind as the helper. Don't overstep. Do what you've been asked, but don't take initiative that you haven't been given. You might think every single thing in a room needs to be thrown out, but if the person who owns those things doesn't agree, you don't have the right to override them unless they've given you permission beforehand. Be patient. This can be hard, but an impatient or overly critical helper can derail the entire process. Be supportive. Your friend may only be able or willing to do small amounts, and that's fine. Let them know you're there to support them, whatever they decide to do. Be positive. This process is really difficult for the person you're helping, and they can use as much optimism about the whole thing as you can give them. Positively reinforce their decisions, no matter how obvious they might seem, to help remove some of the hesitancy they might be feeling. Don't impose your own standards. You might look around when you're nearly done and think it's still pretty terrible. You can think that, sure, but keep it to yourself. You're not the person whose opinion matters. You need to defer to the person you're helping to get to the level of clean or organized that they're comfortable with. Don't judge. If ever there was a time to keep your negative opinions to yourself, this is it. Keep in mind that your words are pretty powerful here, and you can end up being incredibly hurtful even if you don't mean to. Think carefully about what comes out of your mouth. If you can't keep from making negative or judgmental comments, you might not be actually helping at all. Take no for an answer. Once again, remember that you're not steering this ship. If you think you know the best way to handle something, but the person you're helping doesn't agree, it's not your place to try to override their decision. Accept no gracefully, and with the understanding that it's not about you at all. 4. Special cases. Emergency unfucking. Moving. Unfucking your digital life. Schoolwork and work. Emergency unfucking. The phone rings. It's your mom, or your landlord, or an old friend who's in town and wants to stop in. You hang up the phone and realize that you have to get your home ready for the presence of another human being within a day or less. That's terrifying. You look around your house and realize that you haven't picked anything up in weeks or months. No one's judging you here. And it dawns on you that there's no way to turn it into something that looks like an actual responsible adult lives in it within a reasonable amount of time. So the panic sets in, and you start trying to think of a way, any way, to keep other people out of your space so you can avoid having to deal with it right now. But resist the urge to panic. Panic leads to fear. Fear leads to procrastination. And procrastination leads to the dark side. The dark side being where you lock the doors, close the blinds, and hope whoever's coming over just forgets the whole thing and leaves you alone. Well, that's a perfectly understandable response. It's not particularly helpful when, for example, your landlord gives you a notice of inspection, or your heat is broken and you need to let the repair person come in and do their thing so you don't freeze to death. In some circumstances, you really just have to let someone in. There's no way around it. So now it's time to turn your panic into something useful and channel all of that stress into getting things well enough in order so that you won't be embarrassed or evicted. It seems pretty hopeless, I know, but you can make it better. You just need to turn your disaster of a place into somewhere you can actually let people into. Remember, panic is not your friend. So make peace with the fact that someone is going to be in your space and get ready to go to work. Emergency cleaning is a special circumstance, outside of the scope of what we're trying to accomplish long-term in regard to cleaning and organizing. You're looking to bring the overall state of things to a point where someone can come in and look around. Hell, maybe even sit down and stay a while. Okay, let's not go overboard. You're going to be focusing on pretty much everything. And you need to make sure you aren't getting distracted by side projects or spending time on areas that aren't going to make much difference in the grand scheme of your home's overall cleanliness. The time for procrastination is done, and it's time to get to it. Your time here is limited. You're working on a deadline, and you can't put it off any longer. While sitting around stressing about it is completely normal, it's not something that's helping you get things ready. So acknowledge that this whole process is pretty crappy and stressful, and that you're going to be working your ass off for a little while. Then move that to the back burner long enough to buckle down and get some shit done. Eventually, the goal is to get you to a place where your base level of clean is good enough that emergency cleaning is no longer necessary. But if you aren't at that point yet, having a solid plan in place is necessary to avoid the panic inherent in these situations. The clearer your plan, the easier it will be to follow, and the less likely you are to give up or get overwhelmed. When you're emergency cleaning, you can't be focusing on the tiny little details. You're looking to bring the general mess level down from a 10 to a 5 or 4, or wherever you can get it in the time that you have. If you're not looking at the big picture, you're going to end up with a couple of really sparkling clean spots in the middle of a disaster area. Think of it like sanding a really rough piece of wood. If you concentrate on just sanding one tiny spot, you're going to end up with one very smooth spot surrounded by a whole lot of rough patches. Whereas, if you just do a little across the whole surface, the whole thing is going to be smoother overall. It might not be perfect, but it's better. And it's all about the same level. So nothing looks comparatively better or worse than any other part. So keep your attention on making the mess better overall, rather than trying to deep clean every square inch to perfection. As you're emergency cleaning, you're probably going to get distracted by things you notice that need attention, and it's going to seem like now would be a great time to do this stuff. It's not. You're going to be tempted to start a detailed project. Maybe organize your bookshelf, or clean out the fridge, or finally cull your sock collection. Don't! Now is not the time for that. That'll eat up a big chunk of time that you just don't have. If it makes you feel better, keep a list of the projects you're tempted to start. You can always revisit them once you're past this crisis, but do not make the mistake of wasting time on detailed stuff that's not going to make a noticeable difference in the overall level of mess. You need to get started, and you need to do it now. Get ready. First things first, you need to get prepared for what's ahead. Put on some great music or your favorite podcast, eat something, and make sure your beverage of choice is close at hand. Not an alcoholic one. Drunk cleaning is like an advanced class, and you're not at that stage yet. You can't afford to lose time on an ill-placed nap or a drunken debate on the hierarchy of 90s pop stars and their discographies. Put the computer away unless you're using it for music. You don't need to get distracted with the internet and risk losing your momentum. Do not fool yourself into thinking you can just check something online real quick, and then you'll get right back to work. You won't, and you know it. It's too easy to lose huge chunks of time online and then look up hours later and wonder where the day went. Distractions of all kinds, whether it's a detailed household project or an internet spiral, are the enemy here, and they're what's most likely to keep you from getting everything done. As you take your breaks throughout the emergency cleaning process, consider whether or not spending time online is a good idea for you. If you in any way doubt your ability to walk away from the computer after 10 minutes, it's better to just avoid it altogether until you're done. Once you're prepared, make your bed. Yeah, I know. You hate making your bed, and it seems like this should not be the priority right now. But this will give you someplace tidy to retreat to if necessary, and will immediately make your bedroom look like 20% cleaner with the bare minimum of effort. Next, get your cleaning supplies together. Make sure you have plenty of trash bags and some dust rags. Locate your vacuum cleaner and a broom. Take a minute and fill the kitchen sink up with some hot soapy water so you can put dirty dishes in there as you go. If there are already dishes in it, that's fine. This will only help you out later on. Fill the bathroom sink with some soapy water, too. It'll help make everything easier to clean later. Open the shades or curtains. And if it's possible, open the windows to get some fresh air circulating. Get going. Now it's time to really get started. Grab a trash bag and go from room to room to throw away anything that's obviously trash. Pick up any recyclables and make sure those get to where they need to go too. Work methodically around each room, starting from the entrance, working in one direction, and looking up, down, and around. Once you've finished collecting all of the trash you can find, take the bags out of your house if that's possible. Keep in